All right. We are starting our council meeting this Tuesday, February 4th at 7:02 PM and we are meeting in the Community Recreation Center. We will start our meeting with a pledge, which I will lead, and then the invocation will be given by Councilmember Smith. So everyone, we can.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our dear Father, we're grateful this opportunity to have together with the City Council and the staff to consider the best interest of the members of our city and the city as a whole. Please bless us with the ability to understand the issues and to ask good questions and to make wise decisions. We're grateful for this opportunity and for the city and for this future that we are going to see these things and make them most.
All right, moving on to item number two is an approval of the meeting's agenda. If somebody would like to make that motion.
I move that we approve the meeting's agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number three, which is public comments. And there is literally nobody here, so we will close that portion and move on to city reports and business. Number 45, starting with Chandler.
Yes, I have a few things. In our rec department, ski bus has started on Saturday evenings now, and so far all is running well. We're really excited about that program and some of the new changes that have been made to it. The junior jazz season is also underway. We're halfway through, and
wait, did you say Saturday evening?
Yeah, Saturday evening. We changed the time of the day so that kids could that were before we were doing snowbird in on Saturday morning. And they couldn't do junior jazz. We got a lot of complaints about that.
So it's evening skiing
at Brighton.
Oh, right. Oh,
and so they can do junior jazz and ski bus if they'd like.
Okay.
It is a long day. It's a long day, but it's a fun day. But our junior jazz season is also underway. We have over 1,000 participants. I think it's about 1,100 this year, ish.
1,068.
What is it?
1,068.
1,068. Okay, that's a great turnout. Our tot soccer and kindergarten, second grades, and teen soccer programs are now open for registration. We're starting a class, a Chem 101 class on Tuesday nights that'll meet until early March. Right now, 19 kids are excited. We're excited about those types of programs to offer for kids that maybe not be interested in traditional recreation programs. Golf is also really excited to get their new fleet of golf carts delivered here at the end of this month, and we'll look forward to that upgrade. And then one final note is that we are still seeing a lot of on-street parking during snow events. And so if you have neighbors or if you see neighbor people around the city in your neighborhood that are parking on street and you know that the snow event is coming, we are issuing tickets this year. So we're very, very serious about this. So I know the mayor's put together a video, which we're going to put out on the website and trying to raise some awareness there.
Thank you. Councilmember Miller.
Nothing to report.
Councilmember Smith.
I just wanted to report that we met last Wednesday with the ULPT up at the Capitol, and it was a great opportunity to learn more about the legislation on how we can affect cities and how we can advocate for ourselves and the
Thank you for being there. For mine, a couple of things. First of all, I think I mentioned last time, I can't remember, but I was asked to join the Suicide Prevention Coalition for Alpine School District area. So I went to my first meeting, and the first meeting was focused on data that had been collected through the SHARP survey, but I can't remember which grade to take that, but it's... anyway, it starts in elementary school, and you take it every couple of years through your senior year, and then also through the SafeUT app. And so, they had some great statistics showing that overall suicide rates in our area were going down, but for, and they told exit code, so for 840062, which is us in Pleasant Grove, our rates were actually still above the state average. And the SafeUT app was being used, which is great. They received about 5,000 tips or chats from those in Alpine school districts since 2017, and interestingly, about 61% of those tips come from students in junior high school, which is sad. And that there has been an increase in the number of positive attitudes about seeking help for suicidal thoughts But there has also been an increase in suicidal ideation among some grades. There was a 4.4% increase among 6th graders and an 8.7% increase among 12th graders. 12, that's from 2015 to 2019. So we're just working together to try to find some intervention strategies that can, and educational opportunities for people in our community to help deal with suicide issues that we're facing. And the number one, the highest rate as far as for our area of those committing suicide were what they call the transition year, so the 25 to 29 year olds and the 55 to 59 year olds. So we need to move on that. And then we have legislative policy committee meeting on Monday, the first one with ULCT for this legislative session. And some of the things they talked about, there were bills that had either been filed or things that are just being discussed. So some of the things that I wrote down that impact cities that would also impact us. There is not a bill filed yet, but there is some discussion going on at the Hill that there may be a bill filed that limits cities being able to apply design guidelines to buildings. So limiting things like garage placements or exterior materials that can be used. And as you know, our whole commercial zone is, we have design guidelines that say the red and colonial style. So there was some talk about prohibiting cities from being able to implement design guidelines for architectural or exterior materials. There's talk about reviewing impact fees and how to be assessed or what they can be assessed for. And there is still talk about the possibility of personal penalties being assessed against city council members that vote against code, where you could personally be liable if you do so. None of those have actually been bill files that are open yet. Those are being discussed as potentials for this year. There is one on HB 202, which is looking at eliminating criminal violations or criminal charges for code violations. So where cities could assess a civil violation, but you could no longer assess a misdemeanor for code violations. That one has been filed, and so ULCT is discussing that with the representative who's opened that one. There are two water bills that ULCT is opposed to. One of them is the PI metering, mostly because Senator Andrick has indicated that there would be a fund set up to help pay for it, but there's actually no funding going into the fund, so it's an unfunded mandate. And the other one is Senate Bill 84, which is requiring cities to put together a conservation plan for water use at public facilities, and it would have to go to the state and be approved. And so we would have to indicate how we're going to water our parks, our golf course, our city buildings, when and how much, and how, and supply that to the state, and then they get to either sign off on it or reject it. And if they reject it, we would no longer be eligible for any water funding for water projects such as PI meters. So that one's also being opposed by ULCT based on the unfunded mandate there. But they said expect several water bills to come forward this year. And, oh, transportation piece. I think everyone was aware that Pleasant Grove instituted a road fee, and they were sued by, I don't know how to pronounce it, Libertas or Libertas?
Libertas.
Okay, everyone
Libertas.
I'm going to keep pronouncing it wrong, however it is. Libertas. They sued Pleasant Grove. The judge has not ruled on that yet, but they're expecting a ruling within the next couple of weeks, but it's looking like it's going to be favorable to Pleasant Grove, and in which case, Libertas, whatever their name is, it has indicated that they would like to work with somebody at the state level to specifically prevent cities from implementing transportation fees. Of course, we don't have a transportation fee, but that would call anything to question if we have a public safety fee. So that's something that ULCT will be watching as well.
You don't know how much it was?
Their road fee? It's like $8.50 a month for residents.
For residents, it's $8.50 a month. It's quite accelerated for commercial businesses, depending on the type of commercial and what your daily traffic is. Yeah, it's on a utility bill.
But we know Provo has one, and their situation is a little interesting in that Mayor Confucci estimates that about a third of Provo is property tax exempt, and so they don't collect BYU and the temples and their student housing and all sorts of stuff. And so they assess the utility transportation fee where those entities do pay that because it's a fee, not a property tax. Highland recently implemented a road fee of $18.75 per month, I think it is, to pay for their roads. And so it would impact some cities that already do transportation fees, but ultimately any city that has a fee, which I think majority of cities have some sort of a fee. So we'll watch that one as well. That's all I have for now, but it's going to be in the legislative session. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Yes, I can report that I actually attended the my first Sustainability Coalition Utah County meeting, which they're looking to change the name to Utah County Sustainability. Of course, on a
big change.
Interesting group. There's some interesting ideas, and I think I'll continue to think it's everyone. And I'll continue to report. I mean, I just kind of sadness to the interesting, so we'll see.
Is it on like transportation, land use, all of
it's kind of on like recycling, I mean just kind of good, kind of common sense, practical stuff that you I used to do like you used to and other cities are doing to kind of maintain to sustain I guess resources.
Okay.
To not overuse resources and recycle them. Be prudent with the resources that we have, and I think that's kind of what it's all about. So if you can think of anything that we do particularly well in our city or whatever, feel free to share with me.
Councilmember Ellsworth. Okay. We will move on to item number six, which is a review action and public hearing on amendments to Platte K, Canyon Heights, and Cedar Hill subdivision. I'm going to start with the public hearing. Nobody's here, so I'm going to close the public hearing. And Mr. Whittaker presents.
This has come before the City Council before. You may remember that there were two lots here. This is going to be a dividing line. In 2015, the city sold to the homeowner here some open space that the city owned. And the problem with that was that the open space was, it's a deep ravine that collects off-site, off-site drainage and then brings it into the city's storm water system. Not only that, you can see that right through here, there's some power lines here. That's been talking about power lines and this back portion. And then the aqueduct runs through here. So it's kind of this trifecta of easements. Anyway, we sold the land to him. He petitioned City Council last year to come in and combine these lots in order to expand his ability a little. The concern was at the time, you don't like having open space, you privately held. But we sold the land a while ago, so we would expect that. So we combined these two properties into one property. However, the property that he lives on has, it's hard to read there, but that says, non-standard front setback. So typically a front setback would be about this far away, 30 feet away from the property. But if you drive by the property, it's quite steep on the hillside going up to his house. And he said, well, I'd like to expand my house. I'd like to build an addition. I'd like to utilize this new property that I purchased. But the concerns were, how do you incorporate the easements through here? How do you pay attention to the oversteeping of the slopes and in the same time allow him to build what he wishes to build? So the solution here is one, this crosshatched area is, well, this gray area is the storm drainage easement. The crosshatched area is what the plat identifies it as a non-buildable area, it's the slopes build within here. So I don't know why else I'm going to have but still, we were still concerned about the slope on the front of the house and on the side of the house. We required him to provide a geotech report that did test pits on site that showed what the material was that he'd be digging into, and then get an engineer's synopsis on what that would look like for his building. He provided one. We had our engineer review that, and we got a response to it from him about an hour ago, so this is new. But the engineer, our engineer, is not satisfied with the current proposal from their engineer, as they only identify, only address the slope on the front of the property, not the slope on the south of the property going into the easement. So while staff, I don't have a problem with the change, the alteration of the non-standard setback, I do believe it should be conditioned upon a positive recommendation from the city's engineer. Once they sign off on that, if they can sign off on it, then they're good to go. So I apologize, I don't know what our objective is doing with it.
I have pictures here, but you may need to see them. Oh, and they're in the packet.
You don't
know your budget.
Should we table this until we get the
engineers
to sign
off?
You can.
Or? You're saying you would also be okay with an approval with the caveat?
I'm okay with an approval condition upon a city engineer giving positive recommendation. So once they have that, I mean, they can't resolve it if the city engineer says,
right.
There's no way that you can resolve the situation then.
So it's not approved unless they have approved. That's what I would agree.
I'm okay with that. Jeff, do you have any concern about that?
No, it is a valid concern.
I believe it's a valid concern, but I think once he signs off on it, I think from staff perspective, I don't have any concerns.
No, that I agree.
Any questions from the council? I will take a motion.
Motion to approve the vacation of Canyon Heights Plat A and the adoption of the amended Canyon Heights Plat A showing the new non-standard setback line, subject to the condition that the city engineer makes a positive recommendation to
geological report.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 7, which is a review action on the resolution adopting amendments to the fiscal year 2019-2020 budget.
As mentioned in the work session, there's two.
Where is Sean?
It's his son's birthday.
Oh, okay.
So he wanted to go out to dinner with his son.
Good reason to not be here.
Great reason to not be here. Staff always look for reasons to not be here. you guys have to be here, sorry. So there's two items here that we are discussing as part of budget amendments. Let me start with the Lone Peak buyout. When we agreed to the Lone Peak buyout, it was a year ago, the number that was the buyout, it took the liability that was outstanding in the current assets that they had, so the debt service, and it took also the credit that we'd already paid off, and it kind of did this, third party, the formula to kind of balance those two out, and then added it to any existing liability, any existing debt that the district had for fire services. And the final number that the three cities agreed upon was about $236,000, I believe. During the course of last summer, Lone Peak Fire fought a number of fires outside the state of Utah, which is actually a very lucrative thing to do for fire departments, and they brought in an excess of revenue that was not budgeted for. Originally, the staff had heard from their auditor, who says our auditor, that this would then reduce our liability from about $236,000 down to about $170,000. However, what we failed to know at that time, we've since learned and seen in their financial statements, is that the excess of revenue is also followed by an excess of expenditure to make it really a wash. So there's really no reduction in the amount of liability that the city owns.
Based on what Chief Thompson posted on Facebook, the increase in expense was a nice vehicle that they purchased with that money.
So, we are.
I mean, is that a legit expense? I mean,
I don't know the fleet maintenance. This is something that's always kind of a point of contention, is that potentially it's a strong word, but that their fleet maintenance was poorly done. They held onto vehicles long beyond their useful life, and they ended up being more of a liability than an asset. And I think the brush truck that they were using was 20 plus years old. It was ancient days.
So essentially replaced that.
It was essentially replacing the brush truck that you And so as far as something that all people needed, yes, it was something that I would say all people needed.
So I should have asked you this earlier, but I understand that there was an associated expense because they bought this new vehicle, but wouldn't that then create an associated asset that you would have?
Not likely, as it's probably purchased brand new with no debt payoff. So the vehicles, you took what, like, you take a fire truck and it's $800,000, and if you owe half of that, then you have 26% of the value of that and 26% of the liability, where it's all debt on a new truck. I don't know what their purchases was there. They could have that value.
I don't
know that that money correspondingly went to the brush truck. I don't know what happened with line items and went to. I just know that the expenditures exceeded the budget and the revenues exceeded, but it really was a wash in terms of what we thought.
Yeah, and I don't know either. I was just basing it off of what Chief Thompson posted on Facebook. Because a high resident asked if this money came in, where did it go?
This is a good question, and I'm happy to ask the question before we write a check to the local
league. Yeah, the only thing is, I mean, they bought it a month before our termination with them.
I don't know if they bought it.
Or whatever it was, I mean, but at this point, we basically paid for something we have no access to. We don't have any, never had any. You depreciate something over time, so it has a value. It's still valuable in year five, which now we really have no say in. So I'm not sure if they bought it for cash, and maybe they did, that it really goes on in that one time frame.
If it's purchased for cash, then we still should have 26% of the value of the asset.
Right.
It's cash
or
now.
Or less
liability.
That's why
I need to get the answer. I'm happy to look into this. How was that vehicle purchased? Was it part of a vehicle replacement plan that was budgeted for? If that's the case, then probably fell under the normal budget that wouldn't change the asset debt liability of the city owner. It wouldn't change that underlying number. But if it was outside of that, then it possibly could.
I sent this to Chandler, but just so you know what Chief Thompson said, he said, one of the programs we have developed is our wildland firefighting program, where we place resources on the board to go out locally and nationally to fight wildfire. This is a few things. It provides our staff with the job training and experience that they bring back to protect our own area, which has a significant wildfire threat, and as a means to generate revenue to offset costs incurred. The new truck was purchased as part of that program. In 2019, we deployed resources on 9 different incidents and grossed $118,000. We netted approximately $60,000 after all expenses were paid. So basically, he's saying that this vehicle was part of this program.
Purchase
that
vehicle.
Right.
We're looking at it. I would love to raise it to all this stuff. I would love to raise it to all this stuff. So getting the right information is critical. So we can request their minutes and see how they did budget adjustments and see how that money went, load in and out the bulky offers, and see where that liability should be. But my guess is that it's not going to change the other way.
So whoever wants to make the motion, if they want to.
$50,000 for the public safety building to replace the roof, as mentioned in the work session. I'll make sure you say it's in the
document. Oh, sorry.
The roof HVAC system and flooring of that building.
Can I go back to the other one real quick? I should have. So Chief Thompson said they netted $60,000 in 2018, which we were still a member then as well. We grossed $220,000 and netted about $140,000. Between the 2018 deployments and the surplus 1994 truck, we paid cash.
Depends on case that there should be a value, yes. So we'll look at that.
Okay.
I'll ask that question.
Okay.
I mean, you're probably looking at a debt reduction only. If it's $60,000, you're probably only looking at a debt reduction of what?
Well, he's saying $60,000 for 2019 and $140,000 for 2018.
$140,000
was already
covered. So if it's only $60,000, really out of 26% of that, you're looking at maybe $220,000
rather than $236,000.
Okay.
So, but it still, I mean,
it matters.
It matters.
Yeah, I love it. All right, any questions on those two expenses? Those two budget adjustments. Anything else you need to add on that?
No, I think the second one's pretty basic.
All right, someone like to make a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to adopt resolution number 02-44-2028, a resolution of the City Council of Cedar Hills, Utah, adopting the amended 2020 fiscal year budget of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah. Yes. And also with verification of the adjustment to the OP bio.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
Second
by Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Move on to item number 8, which is a review action on a resolution indicating the intent of the City of Cedar Hills to adjust the calling boundary with Pleasant Grove City on the River property.
Yes, the City Council, the City received an application from the homeowners in Pleasant Grove seeking to adjust their boundary with their property to Cedar Hills. Pleasant Grove can provide all the utilities except for pressurized irrigation. There is an agreement within the cities on how to provide pressurized irrigation. As mentioned in the work session, the reason for this boundary adjustment is to avoid costs of paying for financial improvements along their property per the Pleasant Grove code. Our code is not as stringent in terms of what triggers that financial improvement as Pleasant Grove's is. So they're seeking to save about, I think it's about $40,000. But the Rupert's, the homeowners, have made application to Pleasant Grove and the City of the Hills. Mayor and I met with Mayor Pleasant Grove and their city administrator, and the impression that they both were talking with was that they would be amenable to letting this go through. So we're doing our part tonight. Pleasant Grove, I believe, has this on their agenda as well tonight. And we'll work with the Rupert's on continuing this process and being collaborating for final adoption and we'll get that off to the state for approval. So, any questions on this?
Now I will take a motion.
I will make a motion that we approve resolution 02-04-2028, a resolution indicating the intent of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, to adjust the common boundary with Pleasant Grove City, Utah, authorizing a public hearing thereon and providing the notice of same.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 9, which is a discussion on community fiber survey.
As like I said in the work session, the City Council heard presentations about the Lighthub contract as well as the Utopia, what they provide. And as a staff, we're very interested in the development of the community fiber network and the benefits that it brings to our community. I think there's a number of ways to go about doing this. And the one that we're presenting to you tonight is to work with Utopia to prepare a community survey that would go out to kind of gauge the community's interest in developing that type of community fiber network. Utopia would be conducting the survey. There's a sample survey in the pack at Windsor St. George that shows kind of what they're looking for. They ask a lot about what their current ISP providers are, and how satisfied they are with that service, and if they're looking at what they're interested to be in switching over to the fiber network. And based on that, I think it will give the city a very good indication of what expect going forward in a community fiber network. Based on the conversations we had with Utopia, it sounded like if you can actually expect about a take rate about half of what is indicated in the survey. So if you get 50% that are interested, you may be concerned that may not hit the thresholds that you would be needing for a Utopia fiber project. Community take rate, then they said it's about 30% of the city. That's what they're estimating it to be. So if you see a really high
that's
number.
That's what it's required. They have to be higher than that.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. So if it comes back that the interest is very high, 80%, then that's a very good indicator that a utopia type project or a lighthouse type project would be are very welcome in the city. If it comes back low, let's say 50 to 60, which sounds high, but if you can expect half that to be the take rate, it may give you some pause and some cause for concern about maybe moving forward too fast. So this is a good thing. At no cost to the city, when the Utopia conducts a survey from their resources, it's actually very beneficial to the city. These types of surveys to run our ESCO last year, we do this type of similar survey, non-statistical, so you can only put as much faith into it as you want, but it's typically about $20,000 to $30,000. So this is a good service that Utopia is providing the city.
And on take rates, I'll just tell you, they have, Roger sent me this, but they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cities that are currently built out with Utopia. Centerville has a 41% take rate, Linden has a 55% take rate, Perry has a 38% take rate, Tremont has a 34% take rate, and Woodland has also a 44% take rate. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cities that are not built out, and they are all at less than 32%, but they're not built out either, so that's part of the issue. The ones that are built out are all the same.
That may be played to our advantage in that we built out so the infrastructure we put in initially we cover the vast majority of all of our needs going in the future. So it would be an interesting project.
So we see direction from the council.
Yeah, just looking at the questions, they only asked one question about the type of service we were interested in. That is the opt-in subscription service.
Which question is this?
Question 9. So it's the one where it says, are you supportive of the city building a fiber to home network and get paid for only by those that voluntarily sign up for services? I would like to see one or two other options.
More the utility rate?
Yeah, because that will give us a good feel for either case. I would assume that this would still have a higher number. Because it is more favorable,
but we can look to adding that.
We can ask Roger. My guess is that he probably wouldn't, because he said Utopia is very adamant that they will never do that. And I wonder if he would be afraid since it's Utopia survey, unless it doesn't say Utopia.
If it comes back with a higher no rate. You'd be able to use that in presentations moving forward. So that's
Let's ask that for sure. I know he's concerned that he thinks that those cities that are doing that, everybody has to pay for it, or this is going to be sued, or they're going to be sued, which is why he said Utopia is adamant that they're never going to give the option. But I don't see their name on the survey, so it shouldn't matter. I would think. So associated with that.
It's worth a question. What I would like to do, though, like I said in the work session, is that before we launch the survey, I'd like to have the city council have eyes on it to make sure that it's reflecting the information that you want to be able to read out of it. So it's, I think that would be the most.
Do they do the division there? They are okay.
I'm actually not certain how they conduct the survey. And I think that's probably why it's not statistically relevant. In that they're not knocking on doors, they're not calling people, it may just be that they provide a link and it's more of a self-selective survey, which you can't put too much faith into it, but it's good indicators.
I believe you said that they do a survey on
me. So it's mostly online. So if you do that, you're excluding a number of people automatically by only providing it online.
I would imagine that they would get a high response rate on something like this.
I think it's great to get free information, and I think, like Councilman Geddes mentioned earlier, we're free to value it and use it how we want and decide, you know, how strong we think the questions were asked and process it in the way we see best as a council.
I think it's we get a much better response or feel for our residents, that type of thing, rather than just trying to put it on Facebook.
Sure.
Newsletter or something like that. It's just coming out.
You know, I do like this approach. Just in my opinion, for what it's worth. I like this approach because it seems more of a cautious approach. It's taking the steps very slowly. I think some people are moving very fast on fiber, and maybe tripping them along the way. And one of the nice things about Utopia is that they have been around for quite a while, and I know that they went through some real growing pains, but I think they figured out the model in the last couple of years in a way that is financially sustainable. And so really the question comes down to the city council in terms of what does it mean to you? Is it the service to the resident that you're looking to provide, or are you looking to supplement the general fund or something like that? And so that's really what it comes down to. And I don't know that our city is big enough or we would have the ability to make this be a way to raise general fund revenue. I think at this point it's more about the service.
I agree with that. I don't think this should be a revenue.
If you look at any of our utilities, any of our enterprise funds, we don't transfer money from the water account to the general fund. I know some cities do, and that's legal, and there's certain notifications that get sent to your community when you do that. And that's fine if you're very transparent about it. But we keep our water or sewer or storm drain fund isolated away from the general fund monies, so that it's not supplemented, so that that enterprise money is used for those types of utility projects. And if that were the case in the fiber project, then we could look at that, but I don't know that it's... my guess is we would treat it similar to how we treat other utility accounts.
Based on numbers we've seen from other cities that do this, for a city of our size, it wouldn't generate a ton.
Yeah, when you scale it to our size, it's not a financial bill. It's got to be more about the service.
I think it's different than water and sewer because you have to have those things.
Yes.
Or you don't have to have internet, but you still have to be competitive price-wise. And if you price it too expensive, then no one's going to want it. So based on the rates that you could charge, the high take rate, you wouldn't make some money.
You don't have to have internet with Disney Plus to anyway.
And some people post their speeds from Utopia. They're pretty impressive.
Right. So, the motion, we're not looking for a vote tonight. I think the consensus I'm hearing is let's put together a survey. We'll come back to you and we'll present that survey, and then at that point we'll have a vote to say let's proceed with this. Right.
So we will bring the questions back, but if you have additional questions in the meantime to put in it, just let us know. Okay.
Great.
All right, the final item, discussion on the deer mitigation plan.
We have had a resident request the city to look into the deer mitigation program in the city. Some cities, actually a lot of cities, I've learned, Provo, American Fork, Alpine, they do these deer mitigation programs to control the urban deer population. In looking at it, my honest opinion is that I don't feel like this is something that the city should proceed with. As a city hall, we don't get hardly any complaints about deer, so I don't know that one complaint should be enough to trigger the launching of this type of program, especially when I think Lieutenant Christensen, he provided a lot of great information in that in looking at what these other cities and looking at the contract with Humphreys Archery, you start with a flat fee of $10,000, then you have $2,500 per approved site, and then as well you pay $75 per year. And Jeff, I think, has identified probably three different populations of deer in the city. That you have one that's in this current area here around the golf course. You have one on Sophomian here.
It was an indication that they were here before the meeting because this was on our agenda.
You're going to have to stand outside and give these doe eyes. Then you have an open parcel, and then the forest green here, you probably have a deer population there. But the deer population in any one of these three areas are not overly populated to where they become a nuisance. So at this time, I am not terribly interested in launching this program. The program, it's right now, it's only it's a euthanasia program. You kill the deer. It used to be there was a trap and release component where you could trap the deer and then they bring in crews to relocate that deer somewhere else in the state. But due to the spread of disease in the deer population, they eliminated that about a year ago. But Yeah, just with the cost and benefit here just don't seem to weigh out. Especially when we have a deer mitigation program called Canyon Road.
And my fence where deer dies all the time. I was kind of hoping this person would come and explain this.
Well, he's said he's going to, but
The question was, is that part of the conversation was, are residents encouraging the deer population to interact in the urban areas by feeding the deer?
Okay, so I think we can discuss that, making it illegal to feed the deer.
So, yes, so you can open up your nuisance code and say, you know, feeding wild animals or encouraging wild animals to, you know, consistency. I don't know how you word that. We have to go find some samples of it. I've never seen this, so that would be a challenge to find.
You can find it in Pleasant Grove because they're doing deer mitigation program, and from what I understand, that's the first step, is you have to pass an ordinance saying you can't feed deer.
To start the actual deer mitigation program, you do have to go through some code changes, but also there's studies involved to kind of measure what the deer population actually is and what the problem is, and then you can't just wipe out that population. So it's really, it's 20%.
To maintain 20%.
You can maintain 20%. So if our herds aren't big. So if our herd is six deer, we're looking at one of them, is it going to make it? So.
But as part of that process, those cities have to create an ordinance saying that you can't feed the deer. So I would imagine there are several cities who have.
Yeah, so I will look. I just have never looked at this.
I know PG does. I'm assuming AF does.
I'm assuming American Fork does, Alpine does. I have a whole list of cities that do the deer mitigation program. But I wouldn't want to do it as the logical first step pursuing this mitigation program.
But does the council want to do it?
I don't think we need to do anything commercially.
Even
the
feeding?
No.
Okay.
I think we have room to do deer mitigation readily.
Are we aware of anybody feeding the deer?
Yes.
Yes, they eat my trees.
Well,
no, I actually like placing.
Right.
Yes.
I guess I'm involuntarily feeding them. That's my question.
Yeah, see,
we are aware that there is some voluntary. But how big that issue is, I don't think it is a ton.
I don't think it's a very, very, very minor issue.
Yeah.
As far as nuisances go in the city, very, very small.
Let's look at, I think we look at the no feeding the deer type of ordinance. That really necessary to get any question.
Yeah. But not here.
Isn't there a state law about that?
I mean, if you drive through the city, you know what kind of what your population looks like. Well, you see it all the time.
Canyon Road takes care of it.
Canyon Road, you do really see a lot out there.
It's not Canyon Road that takes care of it, it's the cars that run into it. So that was just clear. We've had a car total with my idea, so.
I've had two, so.
But not a Canyon Road.
Okay, well, we'll look at that code and we'll bring something back to the council. Any other questions?
One thing I'll add real quick is the traffic accidents is a big motivator for some cities to do this. Obviously, Canyon Road, there are a lot of deer accidents. One thing to understand with this program is it's the urban population, not the mountain population. So basically, for the most part, anything east of the Canyon Road, you would be able to touch anyway, which are the deer that bring kid on Canyon Road. So it kind of takes away that motivator to improve accidents on Canyon Road, because those are usually the deer that are coming from the mountain, not the herds that are living in our urban area.
All right, that was our last agenda item, so I will take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move that we adjourn.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second?
Second
by Councilmember Geddes, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned.